Jason flew backwards from the attack. He smashed forward with the butt of his 12 into the face of a furry creature, dark with dripping jaws. There were more, many more, all around him. They were wild dogs, a pack of them. He'd been attacked before, but never by so many. Orange eyes glowed at him from everywhere. Roxanne had seen what these packs could do to a man. It wasn't a pretty sight. Three of them approached out of the darkness from about 10 feet away, moving in slowly in a half crouch, lips pulled back, revealing rows of dagger-sharp teeth. They were huge, almost 200 pounds apiece, covered with matted, dank hair, and those jaws big as shovels, foaming, dripping with thick saliva in anticipation of their next meal. Two suddenly shifted to the left as the other approached from the right. They were trying to outflank him. Roxanne wouldn't have it. Both dogs on the left dropped like dead meat to the bloody ground, their rib cages ripped open like a carcass of butchered beef, their necks shredded as if through a meat grinder. Roxanne moved backwards quickly now. They were closing in from out of the darkness. From behind trees and rocks and shadows, their eyes filled the whole night. Everywhere was death. He kept his eyes on them, moving continuously backwards at an even, almost unnoticeable pace. If he turned and ran, they would be on him in a second. His will must tame theirs. He stared at them and aimed the gun at the pack, showing them the weapon that had taken three of them out.
Back! Stay back or I'll kill! I'll destroy you with this!
The approaching killers smelled the dead members of their pack and stepped over them toward the retreating creature with a glowing fire in his hand. Somehow, they knew the gun was poison. It held them back, for a moment. Almost 40 of the dogs closed in on Roxanne in a semicircle, frustrated at not making the kill. They wouldn't hold much longer. Roxanne could see that. A large Doberman with canines nearly 6 inches long suddenly charged him from 20 feet away, fast, a blur of fur and teeth, but Roxanne was faster. The rest approached closer, now completing the circle around him, coming in from behind. He was cut off. There were 5 shots left. A blinding blue-white light lit the sky, bathing the rock-strewn field with a daylight brilliance. Roxanne and the killer pack were caught frozen for a split second, as if by a camera. Deciding they had had enough, the dogs ran. Roxanne turned as the rest of the free fighters came forward from the woods behind him. Detroit stepped up to him, eyes taking in the ripped carcasses on the hard ground.
We couldn't see what was happening, Rock, but we sure could hear the growls and gunshots. We figured a little flashbulb might make them shy.
Rock reloaded his 12-gauge pistol, taking the thick cartridges from his utility belt.
It did. I would have been dog food in another 5 seconds. Well, this is getting to be a habit. I've got an image to protect. I'm supposed to be the tough guy here.
The free fighters kept on the move for 2 days after they left the vast woodlands. They had to be more careful out here because the Russian spy drones flew regular patterns overhead, searching the dusty, rocky terrain for signs of trouble. But because of their regularity, the drones were easy enough to avoid, and the men would just take a break when the next one was due over, hiding behind rocks or under trees. At last, they reached the narrow mountain trail thought impassable by the Reds. They hit the start of the winding path that wove thousands of feet in the air around two peaks in the early morning, just as the sun shot out of the darkness, piercing the clouds just above them with orange-purple rays. It took nearly 2 hours to traverse the crumbling trail that sometimes narrowed to under a foot in width. Even the sure-footed hybrids were nearly stumbling as they rounded the last of the 4,000-foot drops straight down past sheer rock walls of smooth granite, then down the long, even slope that ended in a thick wooded valley. They came to the 3 pine trees beside 2 large square boulders that was the only sign of the main entrance into Century City. They walked silently past the trees and into a tunnel of brush and thickets, nearly 12 feet in diameter.
What the hell? Why'd they change it?
Yeah, it's a signal this week. Here, listen.
Suddenly, a 20-ton black boulder at the end of the little tunnel of brush slid sideways, and there appeared a dimly lit ramp of black-painted concrete on the other side, lit by faint green lights overhead. The 14 free fighters, pulling their pack hybrids behind them, walked into the cavernous space. After the last man had entered, the boulder slid effortlessly shut behind them. As the overhead arc lights came on, khaki-clad guards flashed into visibility. They stood, silencer-equipped Sten guns pointing at the arrivals.
There is nothing like a dame. Good to have you back, Roxen. Care for some wine?
Well, I don't...
Come on. Homemade, vintage 2075 Chardonnay? You know it's tradition we welcome you with some.
Well, okay, Wrath, but just a little. We've got a lot of work to do.
Dr. Schechter, the leading scientist of Century City, and one of its most influential men politically, appeared and shook Roxen's hand.
Good to see you back, safe and sound.
Schechter's fierce brown eyes stared straight into Roxen's. The intensity of the man was immense. The scientific wonder boy was responsible for half of Century City's development over the last 20 years. An unparalleled genius in many fields, Schechter merely shrugged off any suggestion that he was a new Michelangelo with an I don't paint. Schechter moved on to shake each man's hand. In the absence of Council Leader Evans, who was away on urgent business in a nearby free city, Schechter was the highest-ranking official around. Obviously, he had been drafted for the rituals, for he quickly disappeared back into the vast complex of corridors with his omnipresent guards. Schechter was too valuable to lose. Intelligence Officer Wrath sidled over with his debriefing crew of four good-looking women, who he felt helped in making the men relaxed and eager to talk after such hazardous forays. They eased the free fighters into the debriefing room off to the side and began questioning them in groups of three and four. What they saw, how many enemy had been destroyed. Intelligence demanded every scrap of information. The Free Forces were building up the big picture of the Reds, and the information fed into the Century City's computer bank was establishing a clear picture of the actual Soviet strength and weakness in the 1,000-square-mile region around the Hidden City. Roxen, who would write and file his own detailed report later, was spared what the men referred to as the Inquisition. As he headed briskly down the main ramp that led from Security Chamber A, a blonde, well-endowed woman ran after him.
Rock, wait!
Shannon ran up the ramp after him. Roxen stopped a moment and waited for the Assistant Intelligence Chief to catch up, and then immediately began walking again.
Can't wait for the report. Well, let's see. 9K-55s destroyed. 3, possibly 4 limping. I'd say 100 to...
No. Not this time, Rock. I guess you haven't heard. Trouble. Big trouble.
Tell me while I decontaminate.
Identify.
Ted Roxen.
Identity confirmed. Welcome back, Ultimate American.
Dr. Schechter thought you'd get a kick out of it, yeah.
They entered a medium-sized suite hewn from the granite of the mountain the city was built into, reserved for visiting dignitaries and returning fighters. The subdued lighting was more natural than in the corridors outside.
Off.
Music off, Ultimate American.
Roxen walked over to the microwave shower area. In other suites, the other free fighters would also take procedures to minimize the amount of radiation they carried in their bodies and into Century City. Roxen dropped his field clothes into a steel container to be fully deradiated later, and stepped into the red circle of the shower. A purplish beam played over his body as he made shadowboxing motions, slowly exposing every part of himself to the decon unit. Shannon was momentarily distracted by his nakedness, then told him the bad news.
They, the Reds, got Preston from Westfort. He was one of their top military men. He was doing point on a scouting mission in one of the dead zones about 200 miles from Westfort, when apparently the whole sky filled with black shirt paratroops. The free fighters put up a hell of a fight, took out scores of Reds, and most of them got out, all except Preston. Evidently, they got his belt off in the fighting, and he couldn't swallow the cyanide pill.
Shit. Well, he won't talk. I know him, and he's the toughest.
He might talk, Rock. The Reds have this new machine. It literally cuts right through our cortex programming and gets beyond the babble we can implant. No, this new machine, the Mindbreaker, they call it, has two long needles. It's like a headset, big ugly thing. It sticks these needles in and... Never mind the specifications. The fact is, it might break down anyone's resistance. Even yours, Roxon.
He saw the way her green eyes followed him toward the shower as the intel expert continued.
According to our information, they plan to use them on recalcitrant labor, but have discovered it works wonderfully to get information as well. Believe me, the pain... It heightens pain in addition to probing deep into the brain's memory circuitry.
And Preston knew everything about Westfort, his home base. Has he ever been here?
No, never. Only 4 people in each free city are permitted to know the location of other cities. He wasn't because of his military activities. Still, to lose Westfort...
Roxon turned on the shower, first hot for several minutes to get every bit of grime and radioactive dust from his skin and hair. Then, ice cold. Right now, the red bastards could be probing Preston's mind, torturing, searching through layer after layer of false imprinting, going up the pain threshold until... Shannon sat, looking depressed outside the stall. For whatever they did to Preston, he wasn't coming out of it alive. What hellish device could make a man as tough as him talk, betray his home? But there was nothing to do but wait and see.
Order a full alert. Priority 2. And let me know if the daily carrier pigeon arrives. If it doesn't, then we'll know that...
Right.
Roxon went immediately to the computer room. It was there that he would find any possibility of infiltration. Nodding a quick hello to the operator at one side, working on cataloging orders for the Liberator automatic rifle, which were shipped out to other hidden cities by the thousands, Rock sat in front of the main terminal and started the sequential screening of each and every section of the vast Century City complex. He was looking for something, a way to tell if the city had been breached. Perhaps the Westfort incident was not just a chance occurrence, but part of a big red crackdown on the underground. Roxon had worked out a program without even Dr. Schechter knowing, a way of mapping human activity in the city. It was based on radiation count. Spies, either Russian or traitorous Americans from one of the fortress enclaves, were invariably less radioactive than free Americans. It was a very small difference he had noted when studying equations on the buildup of radiation levels after the return of attack teams. What it boiled down to was his own particular program, which he now accessed with his code word POSSUM, to search each level for lower rad humans, and to flash a red dot wherever these personnel existed on the plans, now flashing one at a time on the green-tinted screen. A1, that was main hydroponics, 1,300 meters of underground vault lit by growth lights, wherein most of the city of 50,000's vegetables were produced, without any soil. It had 1,265 personnel on 3 levels, and Possum gave no indication of anything amiss. Next, he hit A2, the central library, a good place to slip unnoticed into the group. The 4-level library was currently filled with 1,237 people. 1,476,391 disks were on file, and 14,442 had been accessed in the past 10 days. The system's behavioral analysis algorithms had found no suspicious reading patterns and no red dot. Century City, the fabulous creation of 100 years of guts and ingenuity, had a less than auspicious beginning. The Russians and Americans had been fighting their Cold War for years, but it looked like the tide was turning in America's favor. The Russians apparently had agreed, and Premier Drubkin made his fateful decision. Strike first. He launched a preemptive strike over the vehement objections of the party functionaries. The Americans hadn't known of the 20 killer satellites the Russians had managed to slip into space in the early 1980s. When they went to counterattack, the killer sats, using laser sighting and particle beam rays, had been able to knock 93.7% of the U.S. nuclear missiles right out of the sky. There was devastation, it was true, but history vindicated, posthumously, Premier Drubkin's decision. It was September 11th, 1989, the last day of the old era. It was rush hour. The 5-mile-long, 8-lane tunnel of Interstate 70, coursing out of Denver and reaching into Utah, was filled with rapidly moving vehicles of every type. Vans, panel trucks, huge double tractor trailers, small imports, rusty old Chevys. Eager commuters going back to another night of TV, roast chicken or pot roast, extra helpings in their own little home. The American dream. Then it happened. The strike. Out of the skies they came. Hundreds of flaming needles ripping the heavens with their screaming descents all over the United States and Canada. Each needle splitting up into 5, 6, as many as 10 glowing warheads heading down to their own special target. Some went off in the oceans or devastated the wrong areas, but 700 of the missiles went off, hitting Aspen, Cheyenne, Las Vegas, and Omaha, hitting Detroit and Tacoma, Texarkana and Little Rock. Everywhere the same, a retina-burning flash, a towering mushroom-shaped cloud. Tens of millions were incinerated in the first few minutes. Millions more staggered around, their eyes burnt and melted, their skin charred and peeling in a shock beyond shock. A world of mega-death. The lucky ones died straight off. Another 50 million men and women and babies lingered on painfully over the months. Their hair and teeth slowly fell out. Their flesh wasted away until it looked like something gangrenous and rotted. And then, mercifully, death. Then the cancers, the malformed babies, the plagues of virulent mutated diseases that took one man by the throat and let the next live. Then came the bandit gangs, murderous packs of marauders armed to the teeth, who roamed the country raping and burning out of blood-lustful nihilism. Century City began as a tomb for the people trapped in the 5-mile tunnel when the war began. Avalanches from surrounding mountains exploding from nearby hits covered both ends of the tunnel, sealing it off with nearly 100 feet of dirt and rock, but it also protected those inside. Realizing the horror that had occurred, those inside used the situation to their advantage. They immediately elected leaders and formed into work groups, stripping their cars to make engines for electricity and rigging up an air purification system through the vent holes in the hillside. Somehow they survived and soon even began to prosper. The annals of the city's history mention names such as Ostrader, Taggart, Meister, and Bond. Men who took charge and made the tunnel dwellers constantly strive for more. They quelled the panic, made the best of the situation, and kept the democratic tradition alive. They realized the Russians were moving en masse into the nearby unscathed Denver by the number of giant airlifters coming by each day. For anyone to leave and go his own way would mean death. They voted, and it was nearly unanimous. They would gather their strength. There were engineers, scientists, mathematicians, plumbers, teachers, auto mechanics. All had been trapped on Interstate 70. They would pull themselves up by their own bootstraps, as their ancestors would have done. And there would come a time when they would hit back, hard, against the bastards who were busy enslaving whatever they hadn't already destroyed of America. The perpetrators of this Holocaust would be paid back with blood, even if it took a century. Hence the name, Century City. They gradually expanded their small society in the tunnel, hewing out more space under the large mountain that stood above them. First, just extra storage rooms, but over the years, elaborate complexes of tunnels and multi-levels had been built, containing a now-bustling, industrious city. And they had changed too, or the children had. Certain minor mutations began popping up more and more frequently in babies born after the blast. Signs like white star patterns on the children's backs, or different color eyes, such as Roxanne's violet and aquamarine combination. Strikes of white on the head, lack of body hair below the face. But it also became apparent that children with these traits were stronger, more radiation resistant, better able to survive in the hard new world. These were the children of free America who would inherit the land, who would retake the USA from her red rulers. When he was a youth, the resistance forces were still unorganized. An occasional Russian truck would be sniped at, a stray Red soldier knifed in the gut. But that was all changing now. The free cities were becoming more and more organized and working toward establishing a unified military council that would coordinate all attacks throughout America so as to cause the most damage. The casualties of the occupying forces were more than doubling every year. The price that the Russians would have to pay to continue their enslavement of the United States would rise until it was too high. Then the Slavic murderers would pack up their things and head for Mother Russia, tails between their legs. How Roxon longed for that day, when America would be free again. All other thoughts paled in comparison to this burning dream. Ted Roxon continued to look at the screen, his eyes tied like a hawk searching for rats, as detail after detail of the vast complex came up on the viewer. Schools, nurseries, exercise rooms, gardens, research and weapons labs, everything linked by ramps, stairways, and elevators, so as to keep the movements of the city's inhabitants free and quick. And it all worked. The best part was that the Russians had no idea how big it was, and how deadly. Diagrams of the main power generating chambers flashed on the screen, 5 seconds per schematic. This was Roxon's favorite area in Century City, for it was the future. No longer would man's quest for power sources despoil the environment, for here were ecologically sound energies. In the history of civilization, all industry and power production left traces behind, junk fouling the environment. Here, the wastes from industrial production, gas, solid and liquid, were reused. Some for power, some harnessed to react with carefully developed chemical-eating bacteria and became inert. The byproducts were mixed with dirt and shipped off to hot zones where they were used to create a thin topsoil for the radioactive desert. This soil would block off the radiation beneath to some degree. Simple experiments had shown that many simple grasses and plants could grow in this environment. The dead zones could someday be green again.
This is Roxon. Speak.
The council's meeting in G3 at 1100 hours, city time.
I'll be there.